Welcome to the conversation here on The Decoding, brought to you by Shock, Safe, and Lock. I'm Jonathan Starr. Today, we have a really exciting conversation. I have with me Adam Martin, who is the founder and CEO of F5 Project, which is based out of Fargo, but they have many things going on throughout North Dakota and even beyond that. And so first off, I want to say thank you for joining us today, Adam. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Jonathan. I appreciate it.
Yes. So first off, I want to go back into your story a little bit. Obviously, the F5 Project was founded in 2016. But before that, you have talked about openly how that F5 came from the key on the keyboard, F5, refresh the web page, hurry up, let's load, and giving people a new chance at life. And that's because you yourself had to go through that, 5 felonies. Tell us a little bit about your past.
Yeah, so, what not a lot of people know is that the name is kind of a double entendre, right? So it was 5 felonies that was why I named it F5, because it kind of stood for felony 5, right?
Okay.
And then I met Doug Burgum, mm-hmm. and he, he comes from the tech space. So he immediately thinks of the F5 key, and he's like, that's kind of clever. And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, well, you named F5 after the refresh key.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I suppose we did.
Yeah.
It kind of started as a double meaning. So,
right.
My background, depending on how far back you go, I'm an Army brat. My mom and dad met in the military. So, and they both struggled with alcoholism and addiction, more my dad than my mom. My mom, it was more of a response to the trauma that she went through with my dad. My dad kind of just brought that with him. I have a brother, and then I have a couple other brothers, from different moms. And it was just, to be honest with you, Jonathan, looking back at all the damage or the trauma or the behavior issues or whatever, it was all pretty typical as a kid. Like, right. There wasn't anything crazy about my childhood. I spent some time on juvenile detention, and that was mostly for running away from home I wasn't running away because people were super abusive or anything like that. It was more, I did what I did. You know what I mean? I just misbehaved. And so I was, the first time I got locked up, I had gotten drunk, I stole a car, and I had no intentions of hurting anyone. It was just a dumb idea.
Right.
Is really what it was. Prior to that, I played football in Moorhead, and I played hockey, for Breckenridge. I played a lot of sports. I wasn't really that good at school. And so I would say that, for a typical kid, I wasn't out to hurt anybody.
Right.
Right. Right. When I got into, my later teen years and then in my 20s, it kind of developed into, alcoholism. Mm-hmm. I just couldn't imagine my life with or without alcohol. Like, it was just always there. Did some drugs, and then was the revolving door in jail. The vast majority of the time was alcohol or drug related. Rarely did I go to jail or any kind of treatment or locked facility for something that was done outside of drinking.
Okay.
and so, and when I got drunk, I just couldn't stop drinking. And then that's usually when a fight would happen or a stolen car or something like that. I was a menace to society for
right.
sure. Spent the good chunk of my life on probation with the Department of Corrections as a juvenile all the way into adult from the time I was 13 until I was 31. And then I got sober. And so that's really the gist of the background. It's not that crazy, other than there was a turning point that happened when I was 31, when I got sober. And that's when the change started to happen.
Yeah. There's something you mentioned. You're a menace to society, but some of these things you never intended to hurt people, and they would happen when you were under the influence, and then you would come to yourself and be like, what happened? I think that's an interesting perception that sometimes people have, is like, these people, there's, why do they got to steal? Or why do they got to do these things? And they immediately go at the person. And it's like, right? They are making those choices, but really the choice that they're making is the addiction to the substance. That's the problem. It's not that they just want to go and steal everybody's things.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a, you know, when you see it in the news, you'll see property crime, or you'll see a stolen car, you'll see domestic violence. And I'm not downplaying, you know, violence against women or children or anything like that, but the vast majority of people that I meet in prison or I meet in jail or that are being released, it was usually a bad night.
Right.
Like right. Something happened that shouldn't have happened. Had they had found recovery or some kind of sobriety prior to that, there's a good chance, I'd say 99% chance, that the people that are in jail and prison, especially in North Dakota,
mm-hmm.
Would not be there had they got sober.
That's incredible. Do you feel like this is something that touches our region differently, perhaps because of the factors that you live in North Dakota?
I think, you know, I've been to, I spent some time in the prisons, you know, as for FI Project in California and some other places. And I've done some outreach, you know, with other partners in Minneapolis. And, you know, every time I go to a different state, I kind of just check out the scene. Mm-hmm. And, you know, every city I go to, there's like a tent city. Homelessness is just plagued,
right?
All over, you know, and I've been to a couple of the detoxes to meet with professionals there, and man, I can't tell you the insane amount of numbers of mental health, trauma, and addiction that are populating those detoxes. You know, we have in Fargo, we have a couple homeless shelters, and I've spent some time there, you know, as a like a participant as well as, you know, a professional. It's not the same.
Right.
Right.
Doesn't mean that there's not an issue. It doesn't mean I'm not not downplaying it, but in comparison of what I've seen in larger cities, we are at the point where we can pivot and make a difference.
That's
we
awesome.
Are not so far down the scale that I couldn't imagine going to work every day in a large, you know, metropolis with a detox,
mm-hmm.
and thinking that, you know, it would be hard for me to imagine that I could make a difference.
Right.
In Fargo, in North Dakota, rarely do I think that I can't.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
it's an awareness thing. The more people realize that they can help, you know, North Dakotans will want to help. So it's something that they just need to become aware of. So as I was looking back through some of your stuff, your sober date is back in 2013. And then the F5 project began in 2016, correct?
Yeah.
So where did the idea come from?
In your research. That's weird to me that you, it's cool. It's just weird. I rarely come across a person who actually does research. Anyway, sorry. So I sobered up in 2013. And started F5 in 2016. That's correct.
Right. And where did the idea for F5 come from?
Oh, boy. I was working at High Point Networks. I started going to, I was a sales guy, and someone invited me to go to Rotary. And I didn't know anything about Rotary. I just went because I thought it was an opportunity to network. Which it was, but it was more than that. They were there. It was like a lot of servant hearted, you know, kind of people that go to Rotary that are trying to be of service to the community, but they're also, you know, networking with other business professionals. And I had went a couple times. I ran into Christy Huber, who is the president of United Way. And she asked me to speak at one of their events because I was homeless at one time. And so I went to my boss, I told him about it. He gave me the green light. I went and did it. And I had no ambitions of ever starting anything beyond, you know, continuing to work for the tech firm that I was working at.
Right.
When I spoke and I told my story in front of like 900 people at this event, it was a huge pivot. It was something that I wanted to continue to do.
Right.
I think there was a little bit of ego, right? There was a little little bit of purpose. There was a little bit, I mean, it was like, it was kind of sprinkled all the different aspects of life on that talk. And when I walked off the stage and I turned on my phone, I just got a ton of notifications, and it was people, it was clients, it was friends, it was, and you think it was like, you know, there was a lot of people saying good job, but there was a lot of people where it finally put a face to incarceration, homelessness, addiction, you know, a variety of things all in one shot. And people finally had someone that they could reach out to.
Right.
That wasn't the typical treatment center or whatever.
Yeah.
And so, I went to my boss. I told him, I don't know what it looks like, but I think I'm going to do something maybe in like a year. And I think I lasted about, 35 days.
Wow.
And
wow.
I went out on my own with no business plan, no idea. I just started going to the jails and talking to guys. And then it just evolved to what it is today.
35 days. Wow. That's incredible.
Yeah.
That was a leap of faith in some part. I mean, there's, you can do some in 35 days, but you can't, that's
yeah.
moving fast.
Well, the fire, there was a fire behind me, man. Like it was like, you know, I'd go to these sales meetings and I was just, it wasn't, I don't get me wrong. I loved working at High Point, the
right.
family, the opportunities. Tom did something. I mean, he gave me a chance to work at a company that was well beyond what the typical person with a bunch of felonies in the background has, right?
Right.
But I just wasn't, it just wasn't doing it
yep.
for me anymore. And I just wanted to, I wanted my life to matter. I wanted my kids to see their dad do something really important. And I would just go to bed every night thinking about how I could do more. And I couldn't do it while having, I couldn't do what I wanted to do while having a full-time job. So that was the leap of faith.
Right.
And when I left, I there was no name, there was no logos, there was no nothing. I just knew that if I continued to stay there, I would never execute what I wanted to do.
Right. That's something that people should take note of. Sometimes it you go and you want the comfort and you want the safety net and all that, but sometimes you just got to go for it. You got to make sure you know what you're doing, the direction that you're going, but don't worry about all the details. We get so bogged down in details. So the F5 project began in 2016. You took this leap of faith. It was actually in October of 2016, I believe. And so now it has grown 6 different cities you have offices in, ready to provide support. You guys affect, and there's probably even more than I have listed here, so you can correct me where I'm wrong, but you guys support Bismarck, Devil's Lake, Dickinson, Fargo, Moorhead, Grand Forks, Jamestown, Minot, Valley City, Williston. It's grown into a thing. It's no longer just hoping or having passion for something. It's grown into this big operation, 60-plus employees, where things are happening across North Dakota. What is it like now to be part of the FI project from the organizational side?
Well, I sure know how to get a guy emotional. It's weird. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, we had a leadership retreat, dude.
Okay.
It's weird. Right. Yeah, it's weird to me that, you know, back in 2013, my only agenda was just to go into the jails.
Mm-hmm.
That was it. Like there wasn't an actual business idea. It was, I'm just going to put forth the effort and see what happens. And if it turns into something, awesome. If it doesn't, I'm just going to keep going to the jail. Like
right.
It was, you know, and then people just kept joining on, and then it turned into something. And so now, you know, we have 60 staff. We have F5 in all those areas that you mentioned. We have a treatment center called The Ridge,
okay,
in Fargo that already has 20 staff. We started it a year ago. You know.
Wow.
And so it's weird to me because it's like, you know, when I get asked that question, I always think about the time I was sitting in jail. and I was staring at the wall, and I thought to myself, this was my, like, the exact thought was, this is the best my life is ever going to be.
Wow. Wow.
Like, I'm going to be in jail for the rest of my life, eventually.
Mm-hmm.
And I might as well get used to it. Like, I need to stop having my family come and visit me. I need to, I need to disassociate myself with everyone, because all I do is create damage, and I'm just a menace to everyone around me. Like, that, those are the thoughts that I used to have. So when I, when people, like, you ask me that question, like, what does it feel like now? It's just weird.
Right.
Like, I can't explain it. It's just weird. Like, I'm not supposed to be here.
Yeah. That's incredible. You know? That's incredible. Yeah. And I think it's really neat how we've already alluded to it some, but how the story goes where you sat there and now you know, and oftentimes stories end up going full circle, but you know the pain of that, and now you're able to go back to those people that are in need, that are sitting there with the same thoughts that you think, and you're able to, like, hey man, I was there, and this is what your life can look like if you commit to making a change, and you know how to put that into words better than I would ever know how to put it into. But that there's got to be something satisfying, something fulfilling, being able to help people that are in a position you used to be in.
Yeah, it is. I mean, that was the original goal. Was it wasn't that five story that I was telling. It was just my story working at High Point.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like, I got the job.
Right.
Like, that was the only story, is I got the job. And yeah. People were just like, that's awesome. Like, I want to work at a place like that. And that was really the story. And then now it's like just, you know, evolving into that I'm a founder of multiple companies. Yeah. And I get to be the CEO, and I have a C-suite of executives at F5 and at the Ridge, and there's directors, and it's just like, you know, it's there is a little bit of inspiration to it, but I never take the credit, because if I take the credit, then I have to take the credit for the failures too.
Right. Yep.
And when you even it out like that, like, people see the story today, but they don't see the crying kids when I didn't come home. Mm-hmm. You know, they did the experience that I built, it wasn't in recovery that put me in the place that I am today. It was in the addiction.
Okay.
And so, you know, the pain drove me harder than the happiness did. And I don't ever want to go back there. And so, and for some reason, the more people that I help, the less likely I am to go back to that.
Yeah.
You know, so what I tell guys is, if you don't want to go back to prison, then help people. It doesn't matter how successful you are, because I know guys who aren't
right.
the typical definition of success that most people would say, but they help more people than anyone.
Right.
They help more people than I do.
Yeah.
And they are happy.
Right. That's neat. Yeah. It's like the classic analogy of the submarine, where you see whatever small percentage of the submarine, and there's this huge part of it that's underneath the water supporting the 20% of this. I'm saying the wrong thing. Iceberg, not submarine. You see 20% of the iceberg, and there's the whole 80% of the iceberg under the water that's supporting it. And that's your story's a little bit like that, where we see the 20% of the polished Adam Martin, that is the advocate for people now. And we don't see the 80%, which is the things, obstacles that he had to overcome in his life to get there. And that's really a neat thing. So, amazing story. Who does F5 Project help? Who do you guys help?
You know, when we started, it was just the guys in the Cass County Jail, in Fargo. You know, guys would get out, and we would just help them we basically just help them get some food and, you know, probably a Taco John's or something, and then get them into the homeless shelter, you know, especially in the winters. Sometimes we let them stay on my couch, before we had anything, when it was just me and, you know, we only had a couple staff that first year. Our operating budget was not even like $100,000 in that first year. You know, I paid myself $400 every 2 weeks.
Wow.
Basically just enough to pay child support. You know, I wanted to ensure that my kids weren't affected by the decision of of starting a business.
Right.
And so I paid myself just enough for that, you know. And so now we help anybody who walks in the door. And so you don't have to be a felon anymore. Mm-hmm. You don't have to, it's preferred, you know, because that's our, most of the people that work here are formerly incarcerated, or they've overcome their mental health, or they are in recovery. So, you know, as long as people identify as one of those three, I think they'll do well here. As long as they're willing to take some suggestions and put in some work. But, you know, we go into the jails and the prisons and treatment centers. So it's really, there's no real absolute anymore on who we help. It's some days it's kids.
Wow.
And then some days it's a business owner. And then some days it's a whole pod in a prison. And
yeah.
So we've evolved into, I think, an institution. And we just want to be helpful.
Right.
Right.
And then you were able to open your own. Tell me a little bit about the Ridge. I'm not as familiar with the Ridge as I am FI Project. Tell me a little bit about that, because this is kind of a branch off of FI Project, obviously. So
yeah, it's its own entity. So it's not really FI. FI is a nonprofit.
Yep.
The Ridge is its own entity. It was started by me and Dr. Jarvis, who used to be the chief nursing officer for Prairie St. John's. She left there a little over a year ago and approached me about opening up some sober houses.
Okay.
And I wasn't really interested in doing more of that because we were already doing that for F5. But I told her I was interested in starting a treatment center. And so we launched that, and it's been ups and downs. And I mean, we went the first 6 months without any payments from the insurance companies. And so we basically just took on all that debt. Mm-hmm. And now it's starting to work, and we have over 20 employees, and we're interested in opening up a residential treatment center in Fargo, and partnering with one solution that this offers is to the Cass County Jail, that is overpopulated with all the beds being filled and having to contract out to other jails and pay very high fees for people to house people that just need treatment and just need a place to go. And so I think that we can be a solution to them, and we hope to do that by the launch of the new year.
That's way awesome. Well, it's been really neat to get to know you more, to hear about your story, and to really feel the impact that you're able to make in North Dakota and beyond for those that are in recovery or working on that, and specifically those that have felonies, because I'm not as familiar as I should be, but I'm sure it's incredibly difficult to get a job once you have that on your record.
And
so you guys have, before we close, let's talk about that a little bit, how you guys have almost advocated for those people in finding places where they can get jobs, or obviously even with your guys' own company, creating employment opportunities for them.
Yeah. There's two kinds of people that I've met in the workforce. There's people that went to college, and then there's usually people with felony backgrounds. I mean, there's a variety of others that kind of go in between those two, but the ones that I take note on are those two individuals, because usually there's a level of jealousy from both sides.
Okay.
You know, when I look at a person who did everything right, if you will,
right,
and got a college degree, and they're getting the big job and stuff like that, there's a level of jealousy there, that it just seems like everything gets handed to them. Mm-hmm. It's not true, but it's a little more true than being a felon.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you see felons come out of prison and everything just falls into place for them, like myself. And is what it looks like. And then they get these big jobs that people with college degrees are getting.
Mm-hmm.
Creates a little contention there. But it doesn't happen as often as people with college degrees. And I've seen a lot of people who that are scared to take risks when everything happens for them.
Yeah.
And then you have this other group of people where nothing ever goes right for them. And it's not risk as much as it is survival.
Yeah.
And yeah. I've seen some really great things and some really fast tracks to success happen with guys who are willing to take risks. And so what I implore business owners to do is to get back to their roots of being risk takers and to hire people they normally wouldn't hire that are trying to be entrepreneurs, but with their lives, like myself and many others that I've seen. And I think the dividends will pay off in the end. It will define culture. It will create opportunities, and it will, there's nothing like having a guy who's got good stories around all the time.
Yeah, that's true. So that's powerful. About the risk, people, we live in a risk averse society, it seems like, many times. And if we got back to that, it would be good in many areas. So it's fantastic stuff. If you want to learn more about F5 Project, where should we go?
Our website is f5project.org, and all of our social media channels are they have a lot of content every day. So check out our social medias and go to our website.
Fantastic. And I believe if you do go to the website, there is a way you can also support the F5 Project if you choose to do that. But again, Adam, thank you very much for coming on today. It's been really informative. It's been great to get to know you more, hear about your story. So really appreciate that.
Thank you, Jonathan. I appreciate you inviting me to be on your podcast.
Absolutely. This has been another episode of The Conversation here on The Decoden, brought to you by Shock, Safe, and Lock. Thank you for watching. Be sure to follow us at The Decoden on YouTube or on Facebook. But for now, have a great day.